stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Hi, this is Tammy Bang Lu and Eric Mann. We've got an hour filled of voices from the front lines. First off, we're going to go up to the Bay Area to talk about the recent mayoral election. We're going to be bringing you a grassroots perspective. We've got Jason Williams from Power, People Organized to Win Employment Rights. Then we'll be heading over to Cincinnati to talk about the recent beating of Nathaniel Jones in the hands of the Cincinnati Police Department, whose death was ruled as a homicide.
We're gonna stand up for right.
And also about what the Cincinnati Black United Front is doing to address the rampant racism and police brutality in their call for a national international boycott of downtown Cincinnati. Then we're going to be wrapping up the hour with Jason Mark from Global Exchange and Cynthia Rojas to talk about the week of action at the Los Angeles Auto Show and their call for cleaning up LA's lethal air and addressing the U.S. addiction to oil. So stay tuned.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Stand up. Don't give up a fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up a fight.
This is Eric Mann on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm talking with Steve Williams, the director of Power, People Organized to Win Employment Rights in San Francisco, California, now saddled with Gavin Newsom, the new mayor of San Francisco for 4 years, patron saint of the Gettys, who was defeated by, Hi, this is Eric Mann at KPFK 90.7. Speaking with Steve Williams, the Executive Director of Power, People Organized to Win Employment Rights. Steve, the subject of the interview, as you know, is your analysis, post-game analysis of the San Francisco mayor's election. As many of our listeners know, the new mayor of San Francisco is Gavin Newsom, an alleged moderate, been developed by Willie Brown, developed by Getty Money, ran against the poor, ran against the immigrants, and just barely defeated a ballpark 53-47, as I understand it, Matt Gonzalez, a progressive from the Greens Party. Before we get into the implications for the movement after the election, why don't you pundit us a little bit with your post-game analysis, Steve?
Well, thanks, Eric. It's good to be here. And it's good to be able to sort of reflect on what it is that we've got in store for us now for the next 4 years. It is a pretty devastating blow to people of color, working class folks in San Francisco to have Gavin Newsom now as the mayor of the city. His campaign, his backers clearly come from a particular orientation where they are looking to drive out people of color, working class people from the city to make San Francisco a Disneyland for dot-comers, for professionals, and for corporate executives. And I think that what's particularly disappointing about it is that the progressives and communities of color throughout the city really did rise up and had a really good chance to be able to put an alternative candidate from the Green Party, Matt Gonzalez, into the mayor's office, which would have really qualitatively shifted the policies and legislation that are being driven forward in San Francisco. But clearly this is a burden that working class people, people of color, have had to carry for numbers of years and decades, and so these next 4 years are going to continue to be a process of our trying to build up our strength so that we can begin to shape the future of San Francisco.
Well, back up your charges that he's a bad guy. You've asserted it. What's so bad about Gavin Newsom? Willie Brown, he's a person of color. He backs him. What's the problem with this guy?
Well, Gavin Newsom isn't a person of color. One of the striking things about Gavin Newsom when we look at him is that he looks like he's a cardboard cutout of Abercrombie and Fitch, the corporation that's been charged with numerous charges of racism. And the way that Gavin Newsom wound up constructing his entire campaign platform, as you said in the introduction, was really driven by the downtown corporate interests of San Francisco. So he came into political power by virtue of his father, who is a retired federal judge. He was, through those connections, able to make relationships with the Getty family. The Getty family, throughout Gavin Newsom's life, has given him hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, so that Gavin Newsom has been able to start a series of businesses, wine shops, golf resorts. And with those businesses, Gavin Newsom was ultimately able to cultivate political relationships with the Democratic machine, including Willie Brown, to get appointed to the Board of Supervisors. And it was from that platform then that Gavin Newsom was able to cultivate support amongst the corporate community, amongst the business interests, amongst the hotel and restaurant industries, such that Gavin Newsom then wound up waging a ferocious attack against poor and people of color in San Francisco over the past 2 years. He initiated a legislation called Care Not Cash, which was essentially an attempt to try to slash the welfare benefits going to homeless people in the city, a disproportionate number of whom are people of color. On the public assistance rolls in San Francisco, although San Francisco is approximately 51% people of color, the number of people who are receiving public assistance in the city are upwards of 76%. And so Gavin Newsom wound up waging a very subtly racist campaign where he wound up blaming people of color, homeless people, for all of the economic problems of San Francisco. And after waging a campaign where he raised more than $1 million, engaged in a complete public education campaign trying to convince the residents of San Francisco that poor and welfare recipients were in fact the root cause of the problems in the city, then it was from that basis that then he was able to build an organization that ultimately moved him into the mayor's office just this past Tuesday.
Well, one of the problems, though, is that, like, the Care Not Cash program, as I understand it, in a capitalist society, who should be against cash? I mean, obviously, social programs to say money plus social programs is a very good idea. People need disposable income. They also need social programs. I think as I read one of the power leaflets, it would take people on general assistance down from $400 a month to like $49 or $59 a month, which means they have no money, totally dependent on programs. If I got that right as the ballpark of what's wrong with him, there's a more fundamental dilemma that this initiative was passed by the electorate of San Francisco. So we have the dilemma that, yes, the working class and the poor and black and Latino communities, Asian Pacific Islander communities are under attack. But if the majority keeps voting away their rights, what's the ballpark? What's the game plan? What's the strategy?
No, that's exactly right. And I think that that's been one of the challenges in San Francisco and across the country for a number of years, as there's been an increase of the number of low-income people, and those folks are disproportionately, as you said, African-American, Latino, Asian Pacific Islander. There's been an increased attempt by local governments to then legislate against those individuals' rights. And the challenge is that these mayors, who are often purported to be progressives and liberals, as Gavin Newsom was talked about in the both local and national media, those politicians then use their position as a bully pulpit to begin scapegoating people of color for all of the problems in the community. And I think then the strategy has been, as it continues to be, to try to build radical organization of poor, low-income people of color to be able to articulate a clear vision of what it is that the city should and could look like, and to begin building alliances in a united front with other people of color, with other working class folks, to then begin shifting the shape of the city. One of the challenges that we faced in the mayoral campaign is that in the runoff election just this past Tuesday, only 50% of the registered voters actually turned out to the polls. And so I think one of the things that we've increasingly seen is that communities of color, African Americans, feel that there's no interest in going to the ballot box. Many Latinos are legislatively excluded from actually having an opportunity to be able to vote. And so one of the challenges I think that low-income, working-class folks of color have is to begin establishing an understanding that the electoral process is just one tactic that we can use to begin trying to move forward a broader strategy for beginning to establish social and economic justice in our communities.
Well, what is the program? And tell us a little bit about, did you play an active role, you being a power and allied organizations, did Van Jones and Ella Baker, were you active in the Matt Gonzalez campaign? And what did you have any critiques of the campaign? And in some ways, it seems like a pretty impressive campaign. I mean, coming out of fourth, fifth, sixth place to fight his way into the runoff, and then obviously the post-election analysis is saying Gavin Newsom is going to have to do some power sharing.
That's right.
So that's pretty encouraging. Why don't you tell us anything that was unusually interesting about the Gonzalez campaign and any still observations you might have of things that could have been done better?
Yeah. I mean, I think that you're right. I think that the Gonzalez campaign was an impressive effort. Matt Gonzalez only declared his candidacy for the mayor's race 4 weeks before the general election. And in that time, he was able to move from a relative unknown, ultimately placing second in the general election and then finding his way into the runoff election. And in the 6 weeks between the general election and the runoff election, Matt Gonzalez was able to really touch a nerve amongst the progressive community of San Francisco and mobilize thousands of people who previously had not been involved in electoral politics based off of the frustration with the Democratic machine that has for so long run San Francisco politics. And with that, I think there were a number of people of color, activists, who've been involved in politics in San Francisco for a number of years who were very, very interested in trying to make sure that Gavin Newsom didn't win the election. And many of those folks, regardless of whether they had supported Matt Gonzalez in the general election, ultimately jumped on board and threw their support behind him in this particular runoff campaign. And so one of the challenges, though, I think that Matt Gonzalez had from the beginning is a challenge that's very similar to many individuals within the Green Party. Matt Gonzalez had a very progressive analysis of particular policy in San Francisco. So he had a very strong position on environmental cleanup and a very strong position on public power in San Francisco, had a very strong policy around economic development that was rooted in communities. Those policies ultimately would have had a disproportionately positive impact in communities of color. But Matt Gonzalez, like many individuals in the Green Party, didn't have a very strong race analysis, and he wasn't willing to put that out and make race a defining feature of the campaign, which I think would have really undercut much of the support that Gavin Newsom had originally been able to garner, largely because of his endorsement by Willie Brown and other members of the civil rights bureaucracy, who had fallen in line with Gavin Newsom because he had been hand-selected by the Democratic machine. And so many of the activists of color formed a People of Color for Matt Gonzalez caucus to then try to push forward some of the concerns around racial justice in San Francisco and began pushing the campaign to ultimately expand its outreach in communities of color, in the Mission District, in the Bayview Hunters Point, in the Excelsior District, in Chinatown, which then ultimately, we thought, was going to both undercut some of the support that Gavin Newsom had previously been able to garner, but also allowed us to do an intensive political education campaign that ultimately put us in a better position, I think, now than we were when we began the election process. Now, in the end, the voter turnout in many of those neighborhoods was relatively low. In Bayview Hunters Point, which is the last remaining African American neighborhood in San Francisco, the turnout rate was only 31%. And so I think that across the board, you can really look and see that many communities of color didn't turn out to support Matt Gonzalez in the way that we would have wanted to. Although what's an interesting contrast to that is that there was incredible support in many of those communities. So as you drove around many of the neighborhoods, you'd see wallpapered in people's windows and corner stores posters supporting Matt Gonzalez, whereas just 6 weeks previously, you would have seen a slightly less intensive presence by Gavin Newsom signs. And so there was a real shift, a qualitative shift in many communities of color. And I think, though, one of the challenges that low-income communities of color have and the Matt Gonzalez campaign ultimately had was a challenge around organization. Matt Gonzalez's campaign had been able to tap into a lot of enthusiasm and aspirations of our communities. The problem was that we weren't able to organize that. And I think that our continued effort with Power and the Ella Baker Center and the Day Laborers Program, all in San Francisco, is a continued effort to organize the aspirations and hopes and dreams of working class communities of color so that then in the future, both over the next 4 years and then in the next mayoral election, we will be able to both tap into the excitement, but then also channel that and move it at the election box on the day of the elections.
This is Eric Mann, KPFK 90.7 FM, talking with Steve Williams, the Director of People Organized to Win Employment Rights in San Francisco. We're talking about the post-election analysis and where do we go from here. Steve, I mean, one of the things we've had in Los Angeles with the Bus Riders Union is in terms of trying to deal with progressive elected officials, Mayor Hahn, for instance, was very, very friendly to us before the election, and we stayed relatively neutral, not relatively, we stayed neutral, but gave him quite a bit of play on the buses because he wanted that. We had a press conference with him and other candidates. But after the election, he sure didn't like a sense of being pressured. He didn't like, he likes sort of people to play the inside game with them. But when we showed up every month and put things on the agenda at the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, he's not been a strong advocate for the civil rights of bus riders since the election. What do you think is going to be the sort of inside-outside game of working with Matt Gonzalez? And what are some of the complexities of trying to pressure him from the left? Because he's now going to be in a position where Newsom's going to make overtures to him. He's going to be trying to be statesmanlike and reach out to Newsom. Sometimes it'll lead to some benefits for the people. Sometimes it could lead to a complete double cross. How do you exercise independence and initiative in the United Front without breaking your relationship with Matt Gonzalez?
Well, I think that that is ultimately going to be the central challenge over the next couple of years. I think that as Power has developed our strategy, very similar to the strategy developed by the Bus Riders Union and the Labor Community Strategy Center, what we've tried to do is continue to build our independent base. We feel that our strength, both strategically and on tactical campaigns, comes from our relationship with low and no wage workers throughout San Francisco who are very clearly developing positions around campaigns and figuring out how it is that we want to move our particular demands forward. So, for example, when the Care Not Cash campaign came back to the Board of Supervisors, it was our membership who was very clearly developing a position that we wanted no cuts in the welfare program and we wanted no expulsions from the homeless shelters. And those were two demands that were coming very clearly from our membership. On the flip side, many of the members of the Board of Supervisors were looking to come up with a kinder and gentler version of the Care Not Cash program, including Matt Gonzalez. And So then our strategy revolved around trying to develop an alliance with many other progressive leaders, not elected officials, but other progressive leaders who would then stand behind no and low wage workers' demands for no cuts in the welfare checks and no expulsions from the homeless shelters. We were able to cultivate relationships with several progressive leaders, and we were able to ultimately move a couple of other board of supervisors. With that alliance then, we were able to go back to Matt Gonzalez, put together a series of fundamental demands where Matt Gonzalez then did stand on point with our demands to make sure that we were putting forward a fully alternative proposal, one that said that there should be no cuts to the welfare checks of welfare recipients and that there should be no expulsions from homeless shelters. But I think that that is going to be the continuing challenge in the next couple of years as Matt Gonzalez begins to try to figure out the lessons of this particular campaign. I think that to the campaign's credit, what they were able to do was put out a series of relatively progressive initiatives and stand by them throughout the campaign. And I think it's going to be our hope that as we begin to try to cultivate relationships with many of the people who were involved in the Gonzalez campaign, that they understand that their relationship to the campaign, that the enthusiasm that grew out of this particular initiative was based on the substance of those policy proposals, was not based on the charisma of one particular individual, but is instead based on the understanding that those policy initiatives, if they were enacted, could begin to fundamentally shape the future of San Francisco such that working class people, people of color, can actually live and raise their families here. That's where the enthusiasm came from, and I think that we're going to need to be able to develop broad united fronts to be able to support that substance.
And this is Eric Mann with Steve Williams of Power. Steve, the last question is, what's your work on the ground look like? You have about 2 or 3 minutes. Besides the constant pressure of the new mayor, what's your organizing work look like? Just tell us a few of the programs that Power's involved with.
Yeah, Power's major work is building organization amongst no and low wage workers in San Francisco. We have organizing projects amongst unemployed and welfare recipients in San Francisco. As well, we're organizing domestic workers, largely Latina immigrants who clean houses in the city of San Francisco. And our work has been going out to the locations where workers are to try to begin building organizations where the trade unions have been unable to do that. But coupled with the process of building organization, we're trying to raise consciousness. And so we have a very sophisticated political education and leadership development program designed to put our members in a position where they're able to offer both tactical but then also strategic leadership, both to our organization, Power, but then also to the broader social and global justice movement throughout the country. And so Power's work has really been seen as sort of twofold, both trying to build organization, raise consciousness, and then also establish alliances with other no and low-wage workers organizations like the Bus Riders Union.
Well, I'll give you one last shot at another question, which is as I understand it, there was a killing of a black woman in San Francisco several years ago, and there's a sort of a statute of limitations that's being developed about whether the police would be exonerated or tried.
That's right.
What is the status of that, if you can tell the woman's name, of course, and what's the status of the struggle right now?
Yeah, it was actually a Latina woman, Filipina, Sheila DeToy, was killed by the San Francisco Police Department. And right now the San Francisco Police Commission, which is appointed by the mayor, Willie Brown, is moving to exonerate the police officers who actually murdered her. And so actually tonight there is going to be a mobilization in San Francisco trying to pressure the San Francisco Board of Police Commission to then actually follow through and press charges. And it looks like we actually have been able to secure 2 out of the 3 votes necessary to get the police commission to move. But tonight's challenge is going to be to get that 3rd vote.
Well, thank you very much. And this is Eric Mann finishing up with Steve Williams from Power. In terms of our continued efforts to get a handle on the Bay Area, the work that both Steve Williams and many other good comrades over at Power, and Van Jones at the Ella Baker Center. These are some of the people that we'll be looking to pretty regularly to give us analysis of our friends to the north. Take good care.
Take care.
This is Eric Mann. I've just been finishing an interview with Steve Williams, Executive Director of Power in San Francisco. And as soon as we come back, we're going to have an interview with Damon Lynch, a reverend in Cincinnati, talking about the growing police brutality problems there. And Tammy Lou will be kicking off that discussion.